Hi, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Project Mindy. I interviewed Venk Patula, the star of Four Samosas. This critically acclaimed film is groundbreaking in its featuring of South Asians, and I was thrilled to interview him. Hope you enjoy.
But so when I got the pitch for this article, the line was, Four Samosas is a cross between Napoleon Dynamite and Bottle Rocket. Would you agree with that? And like, what parts of which? I mean, I love both of those movies.
Yeah. Napoleon Dynamite and Bottle Rocket. I definitely agree with the Napoleon Dynamite. I think that's, and I think that into the essence of Bottle Rocket being Wes Anderson's first feature and it kind of having that heist element as well. I think there is definitely, I think those are totally, you know, off the mark. Napoleon Dynamite was definitely something that a lot of people have also said it kind of feels like. And I think we were kind of, it is a quirky film. And I think it was always meant to be a kind of quirky film. So it's a huge compliment, actually.
Okay. So Ravi Kapoor, I'm just looking at my notes, sorry. Ravi Kapoor wrote and directed the film, correct? And how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I had, you know, Ravi is someone I've always looked up to. He's, him and his wife, Meera Simhan, who's also a very accomplished actress, together have, they've worked together. They made a film called Miss India America together. And I just kind of knew about them and somehow got connected to Ravi through an old agent that I had and kind of just started to send him short films that I had made. And he would give me feedback on them, he'd give me notes, and we just kind of developed a relationship that way. I would even make short films just to be able to send it to people like Ravi. So yeah, we just kind of built a friendship that way. And then I had asked him to act in a podcast that I co-created and starred in as well, called Masala Jones, to play the father character. So actually, Ravi and Meera both played my parents again, the first time in Masala Jones, the scripted podcast. And I think we just kind of built a rapport that way. And so, you know, the years passed and we built this relationship and he just sent me a script and just asked me for notes on it, just thoughts on it. And I said, sure. And when I opened it up, it was called Four Samosas. And in it, there was a character written as Venk, which I thought was, you know, interesting name choice for a character in a film.
Was he dropping a hint there?
Maybe. I wasn't entirely sure because he just asked me for feedback on it, for notes. So, but then I started reading it. I was like, wow, this Venk character is, you know, he's really someone I resonate with, someone I can, that I really connected with. So I think he was inspired to write that character with me in mind to play the role. Of course, I gave him some feedback just as a fellow writer and creator. And then he had asked me a few days later if I wanted to act in the role and act in the film. And I said, yes, I'd be honored. And then he asked me if I would produce it with him as co-producers. And, you know, one thing led to another. And at first I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. And then it worked out. So then we kind of joined, you know, we joined together in terms of being producing partners and started the process of, you know, pitching the film and getting it out there, and have been involved really through every step of the way with Ravi and trying to get the film released and made and get it out there.
So this was your first full feature length film?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me about Woke. Was that the...
Yes.
That was a similar, you know, distributed work, would you say, like with
them? Yeah, definitely. So that was a short that I made on my own. It takes place in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's about a aspiring wannabe hip hop artist who gets into a heated debate about the cultural appropriation of hip hop in Atlanta with an African-American civil rights activist. So it's just very like heated debate. That set in Atlanta, and I shot it there, and I directed and edited and starred in that one. And that was a film I remember sending to Ravi, and I think he really liked it. And we started playing all the festivals, and you know, I think the film ended up doing really well. We won some awards, and it was just great to have a film that I had made get out there. I found it much more rewarding than, you know, the auditioning process that I mentioned to you before. Not that I don't hate auditioning. I do enjoy it, but I think it's just, it's different when you make something, you know, and then it gets seen by people as opposed to being lost in a room somewhere. So yeah, I think Ravi's mentioned that it's it has inspired him. Of course, the character of Vinny became something different than the film I was in and the original role that was written with my name in there. I think it kind of morphed, and that became a creative conversation about, you know, how to approach Vinny and approach the film.
So would you say that there is some of yourself that was incorporated into it as you started making the film and working on it?
It's funny, because I read the script and I thought, wow, I really resonate with this character. And then I told Ravi, I was like, Ravi, did you steal anything from conversations that we had? And then he said something interesting. He said that maybe we're more similar than you think. Hmm. Yeah, that was interesting to hear. So I think in some ways, I know the way Ravi talks about Vinny is as a character who's sort of lost his voice and doesn't really know where he stands, and he's kind of stuck. And I definitely resonated with that feeling. I started a podcast about failure. And, you know, I think I know what that feeling is to feel like you're kind of stuck. And of course, at the end of the day, Vinny's heartbroken, you know, I think we all know kind of what that's like. And so, yeah, so I think those were my two kind of points in emotionally to sink into the role.
So sounds like when you say the heartbreak, absolutely, like universal emotion that people can relate to, whether they are an aspiring rapper and, you know, trying to get into hijinks. Would you say that it's like someone, like everyone, like a movie everyone can relate to, like all ethnicities or genders, or like what do you see the ideal kind of audience member to be?
I mean, I really do feel like it's an audience for anyone who enjoys a heist film, enjoys a rom-com, because it's kind of a cross-section between the two of those. I think it's emotionally an accessible film. I think the backdrop of it, and of course it's authentic in the sense that there is our culture, the South Asian culture, is integrated into the film. It's called For Samosas, but at the end of the day, it is a heist film, and it's a movie about a guy trying to get a bunch of people together to pull off a heist and get a girl back, you know. Yeah. So how many movies have we seen with you know, that kind of a storyline or something, you know, where those elements are being involved? So I really feel like if you like quirky movies, if you like comedy, if you like laughter, I guess.
You like laughing, yeah.
If you like laughter, yeah, then this is really for you. I don't think you have to be South Asian to love and appreciate this film. I think anyone who loves those universal themes will connect to it.
So tell me about Crisp Entertainment. That's your company?
Yes. So Crisp Entertainment is my production company, and I started it a very long time ago with a dream of trying to produce my own content that I could also star in projects that I could also be involved in as a writer, eventually a director. I think I grew up, you know, seeing movies, and I'd be like, oh, it's interesting that Leonardo DiCaprio is also a producer on some of these projects.
Always noticed that too.
Yeah, you know, it's like, these actors, or Tom Cruise, for example, they're not just an actor involved in their productions. And I think I always knew I have a business sensibility. I'm getting an MBA. So I kind of knew that I could dip my skills into that hat as well, in terms of trying to run a business and how do you get something made. And for me, I always was interested in having stories that are seen, not just, you know, writing something or producing something or acting in something that no one sees. Because for me, I think we can't move the needle on representation if people can't access it,
right?
Because then they don't know how to have those conversations. Media is so important, so powerful. So obviously you write for this magazine, so you know.
Yeah, getting those stories out there is really important. So you've described yourself as a multi-hyphenate, and then you just said that you always had an interest in business. So like when you were getting into this field professionally, did you always see yourself as those, and those like the MBA, is that something you planned on before, or was it after business? Like,
I'm definitely not. I think I was, I don't know. I think, I always, I guess I, everyone always says that it's show business, right? And I kind of understood that there was that business element. I guess I just sort of, I think going to business school helped me. And I studied at Chapman University in their MBA MFA program. They have a joint degree where you get a business degree and a producing degree in the MFA program. And I think it just helps contextualize a lot of things that I kind of maybe had an instinct for before, but then really, you know, put pen to paper and kind of understood what's going on. And I always tried to apply it towards what was going on in making this film and generally how the film industry works and operates. So I think it's always something that I had an instinct for that was there. Getting an MBA specifically was never, you know, my goal. It ended up happening that way because of the pandemic. And I was looking for ways to stay involved in being in the industry. So I thought maybe I'll go back to school.
So backtrack a little bit. I know we talked about being interested in entertainment when you were younger.
Yeah.
But when I talk to a lot of South Asians who are either in the show business or just non-traditional careers, a lot of them have sort of like a backup plan. Like, did you have something you were working towards? And it was like, oh, maybe this, you know, entertainment thing is going to work out.
You know what? I never had a backup plan. I can't tell you how many times my mom was like, what is your backup plan? You know what? I'll put it this way. Let me tell you all the backup plans my mom had for me to be a therapist, to be a motivational coach, to be a possibly a therapist. She was like, you should be she wanted me to get when I went to UCLA and studied acting, she wanted me to get a minor in accounting, like be an accountant. Mm-hmm. Let me think, what other, I feel like those are all the backup plans that she was trying to get me to pursue. And I guess, I don't know if I'm completely right or wrong in this, to be honest, but my feeling is that if you want to be a creative and do it professionally, the way to get there is to start by just doing it and get better at it and enhance your skills. And the more you do it in the years that you put in will make you better. And by being better and by putting yourself out there and maybe being a little business savvy and being a little smart, you might be able to kind of hustle your way in, if that makes sense, or find your way. So that's always been my approach. And even since my very first short film, which says Crisp Entertainment on it, which was just me editing it and then writing in a little title card there, that was always the dream I had. So yeah, very proud of the fact that not just myself as an actor, but also my ambitions as a producer and building a production company will be represented in this film.
Yeah, that's great to have people make their own stories, because who knows better what it's
that's
like.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Who knows better?
You said briefly that maybe some plans changed because of COVID. And I'm always curious about that because, like, obviously, like, the world shut down, but certain careers were just more likely to face hurdles than others. Mm. And, you know, acting seems like one of them, making in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's I was making this podcast called Failure is Funny, and I was talking to people about failure. And I think this is sort of where the MBA MFA came into play, which was I was sort of feeling like I was stuck, kind of like Vinny, to be completely honest. Again, one of the reasons why I resonated with the character was feeling like you're trying to get something going, but it's just not happening for you. Mm-hmm. And so I think COVID forced me to sort of accept that fact and have to say, you know what? If I have to pursue a different career option, you know, just to survive, then maybe that's what I have to do. And I started applying to internships. It was challenging. It's hard to get an internship, even when you produce.
Very hard.
It's very hard.
I mean, paid.
I know, paid too. I mean, I did an unpaid internship for a production company, which was an invaluable experience. I learned a lot from it. But yeah, I think I could feel within myself that I had the skills, because I've been doing this for now 11 years, and it's been a journey. It's been an up and down just on the creative side. So I just sort of very grateful that the film is now being embraced and people have really enjoyed it, because I don't really know what would have happened.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know?
Go back, I guess,
okay.
A while ago. So
okay, going back.
Yeah. moving back, we're kind of skipping all around your career, but so the Nick Cannon story is told a lot in your interview. So I want to hear it from you. What happened?
Okay. Nick Cannon.
You know, the first time you were discovered.
Yes. Okay. So I got this audition for the internship with which was a movie starring Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn. And it was my first audition ever. I had just
first audition
come
ever.
It was my first audition ever. I was 19. And what happened was, is this, I got a call. I was in a philosophy class and I got a voicemail from the theater school saying that the casting director for this film was calling up universities because they couldn't find any South Asian people. And so they were calling UCLA saying, do you have any? And they were like, well, we have one. We have this
how
one guy.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, well, and I was like, great. Sounds good. Who would have thought 10 years ago they wanted a South Asian? I mean, now, of course, it's different. I think they'd be able to find lots of people. But 10 years ago, they had to call schools to find anyone who was young. So I was so nervous. It's just so nervous going to that audition. And then because I was so nervous, I kind of used to do this thing. Not anymore so much, but then at that time I would like throw in like music in my earphones and I would just go out on the street and just try to dance, just get the nerves out of my system. But
so
I really went hard
on the sidewalk,
on the sidewalk somewhere in Hollywood. I can't remember exactly the street. I think it was Highland, maybe. You know, I just ran up and down the sidewalk maybe 10 minutes before the audition. I was so nervous dancing. I was probably going at like 120%. Like I was not, you know, it was a little small thing by myself. I was literally up and down the street just going for it. And so this car, as it happens, pulls up on the road and the window rolls down. And this guy is like, dude, you're hilarious. I'm going to put you in my movie. And I'm like, okay. And I had these business cards at the time, which were really not great, but there was like a Comic Sans MS font. Yeah. And it had like a little photo with me like this. And it said actor. And I had printed out these business cards to give them to like, just because, like I said, the business, right, was something I always thought about. So I had these business cards, but I was giving them to like people in my class. I was giving other actors in my undergrad class, like my acting business card, like for no reason. Like it was, I just was like, well, you should have business cards. But I had a business card that day and I gave it to this guy in this car. And I thought he was like an MFA student filmmaker director. It's literally what I thought, right? I was so green. I went into the audition, blacked out in the audition. I was so nervous. Can't even tell you what happened. And then got an email later saying, yo, it's Nick Cannon. Might have a part for you starting in June 4th. Let me know. And I was like, who's Nick Cannon? So then I Googled him and then I called dad and I was like, dad, there's a guy named Nick Cannon who wants me to be in his movie. He's got a long Wikipedia page. That's the mark. That's the mark of someone who knows what they're doing, I guess. Yeah. And that he was married to Mariah Carey at that time. So so that kind of began that journey of working with Nick. And I worked with him a lot. It was an incredible experience to share time with him and the comedians that he worked with, just being in that environment and realizing, I think one of the things I realized was just how hard it is. I think I spent maybe 48 to 72 hours traveling with Nick everywhere he went. And it's exhausting, you know, getting on these jets and going places and you're catching sleep whenever you can. You're always promoting. It was a little bit of what's going on now, to be honest, which is all good. But it was a nice check of like, hey, this is what you're signing up for. This is kind of what it's going to be, what it's going to entail.
Like when you make it, it's gonna be
like, do you really want this?
Yeah.
I remember there was an interview where he said that fame and these things is just not something that, you know, it's always pros and cons.
And a lot of people got kind of their break with him. Like he did spotlight a lot of people.
He did. That's what I love about Nick. It's he's with Wild and Out, especially, you know. I mean, I remember on School Dance, I had met Pete Davidson before he became, I guess, Pete Davidson now.
Oh, that's great.
And we were both on that movie together. So it was an interesting, I think when you're out there trying to find the next generation of talent, you know, you, I think, surround yourself with all the best people. And Wild and Out definitely did that for so many people. So I'm very lucky that I got to be a part of that show in a variety of different capacities in season 6 and season 12. So, yeah, I mean, it's like it's like a comedy football camp doing Wild and Out. It's difficult and really I learned a lot.
So was I'm sorry I didn't see the movie The Internship, but was there a Salvation?
So what happened was, and this happens a lot with us, is they kind of go, oh, South Asian, Asian, East Asian, it's kind of the same thing. So instead they cast a non-South Asian character in the part that I auditioned for. So it happens all the time.
I was like, I don't want to say anything. And he ended up being beaten out by like...
No. He did. No. They cast somebody else. And, you know, that's the thing about casting is you just... As an actor, we don't have control over what's going on the other side of things. Yeah. So, yeah. And part of that is freeing because you don't have to take on the stress of it as a producer. Now I know. comes with a responsibility, but, you know, it's a balance there.
But you still got a great opportunity out of...
Absolutely.
You know, having me.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, it's one of the best.
So... What do you think? I know like some actors, you do have like an education, like your undergrad degree is in acting.
Yes, but, I studied acting and I minored in English at UCLA.
And would you say that like it's like a necessity to have that kind of academic background or acting classes or something to kind of succeed? Or like, I guess, how did it help you?
Yeah. I don't think it's necessary. You see a lot of actors that don't get formal. I mean, I should say some form of training is helpful because I think there is a technique to it and there's talent, of course, but there is a technique and you have to find the one that works for you. And the one that works for me is a combination of a lot of different things. And I think that's why I appreciated UCLA's training, because their approach was very much, here's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And you kind of take what works for you. And some classes, didn't really work for me, but this one, I really like Alexander technique, or I really like this particular approach or this teacher's approach to finding a character or, you know, finding yourself in the role, what have you. So yeah, I don't think it's required, obviously, but I think technique does help shape. It just gives you a little more control over your own talent, so you kind of know how to apply it.
So I do, I guess, a lot of our readers, I think a lot of people are working in 9-to-5 jobs and have creative ambitions or entrepreneurial ambitions.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for people on how to get into what they want when they don't have any connections or something, for example?
Yeah. Give me a second to think about it.
Well, I guess like for you, did you have people growing up in your life who were like in the business or anything?
No, I have no connections. I came to LA with 2 suitcases by myself. My parents couldn't afford to move me in, so I just did it on my own. No, I really don't have any connections. I think, I don't know. I would say, it's tricky. I think you have to have ambition, but at the same time, you can't let your ambition swallow you. And so I think it's about setting a small goal that's realistic for you and starting with that, because when you have a full-time job, you have responsibilities. And so you can't, if you think to yourself, well, I mean, even if, you know, if someone came up to me and said, I want to win an Oscar, how do I do that? Yeah. You know, that's not quite the right question. I think, you know, I think it's about adjusting and trying to figure out what is that idea, that seed of that idea, and how can you implement that idea in the, it's sort of like creating an MVP for whatever that dream is that you have. To be a minimum viable product, to just take a small idea of it and then test it. And then about iterating, because ultimately it's going to take time to find exactly how you want to go about doing something. And getting it, an iteration really helps because you get feedback. And then based on that feedback, you can kind of change or adapt the idea, whatever it might be. And I think it's really about starting. I think there is a lot of fear probably about trying something. But for me, I find that what's always hurt me is my expectations of whether something is going to be successful or not. So I think making it less about whether trying to do this thing is going to work. It's more about, would it be fun to try? And if it just sounds like it'd be fun, like I'd like to take an acting class, that sounds fun, or whatever it is, to do it for just that purpose and to really try and do it for the process and the learning outcome that might come, that you might gain from that. And then separately, I think in terms of making it I think when it comes time to make the decision about whether it should be a career or not, that's a whole different conversation. But to start, it's just about those small things.
What did you mean when you said you can't let ambition swallow you?
Yeah, I think
I haven't heard that phrase before. That's what I'm just asking.
Yeah, I know.
Like a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think basically it's about trying to find balance ultimately. And you don't want to let your ambition push you past your limits to the point where you can't recover. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because it's going to be a long, I think part of it is that it's going to take time and things aren't just going to happen immediately. So I think it is about just I say that because I've historically been terrible at putting things in perspective and I'm terrible at prioritization. I just go for it. I'm like, let's do it. And I go all the way and I commit 120% and then I kind of hurt myself and then I have to come back, mm-hmm. you know? So I think if that repetitive process can be destructive. So I'm more like cautioning to say, don't let your ambition become more important than your overall health, than your overall well-being. I think it's about defining those parameters for yourself. And that's, you know, a conversation about mental health that I think is important to have.
And now when you're talking about other things that you've done and like, you know, working on your own project, what was different about being on the set of Four Samosas with, you know, a bigger cast and a, you know, longer script and
everything? Yeah.
I guess like what was different for you?
It's funny. I think it's all the anticipation of something was the challenge. You know, I think for myself, I was a little apprehensive about, can I pull this off? You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, can I pull it off? I remember calling my mom one night, 2 nights before or 3 nights before. And I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And she was like, you need to study your lines. That's what you need to do. Get back to just make sure you know it front and back so that you don't, you know. And I think there's a little bit of the imposter syndrome that we all deal with in some way, shape, and form. But I think ultimately, you know, when it came down to actually doing it, it was so much fun. And the other cast members from Sharmita, Sonal, Nirvan, Karan, Summer, Mira, and Ravi, you know, it was just it was so great to make a movie with friends, you know, with people that you know, because that's not every job. Not every job is you walk on and you it's somebody that you know. And I think we had such a blast filming it. I think it shows up in the film and everyone is so funny in their own way and everyone's so unique. But for me, it was just like, because I had made all these shorts and done all this stuff and made all these, tried to do YouTube videos and TikToks and everything, I think I really felt like I had the stamina had kind of been built up that I could do this. I mean, it was still exhausting and tiring, but I did kind of feel ready and ready to kind of step into the moment, I guess. I don't think I would have been ready 3 years ago or at the beginning of the pandemic when I was trying to make my other feature.
Oh, okay. So you think like the time definitely, it's not like, oh, wow, I wish this had happened a few years ago. It's like,
no.
Yeah.
No, not at all. No, because, you know, I mean, I generally just believe things happen to us, you know, whatever happens, it's all for our benefit. I try to be positive. So
you have a very positive vibe about you.
I do. I
yeah. It comes across.
Oh, that's good.
So I've heard from other, I guess, South Asian actors that when there are, I guess, people who look like you behind the camera and in the crew as well, it makes the acting experience easier and kind of really makes more of a difference than they thought it would. Would you say that was true for you?
Absolutely. There's a comfort. There's just a knowing you know, and you can have conversations that you wouldn't normally be able to have and feel comfortable to have them because you know there's a shared background that it's, you don't have to explain it. You know, you don't have to be on guard in any way. You can really, I think as an actor, it's just so much easier to be more vulnerable and to let people in, especially when you're in a community and the crew behind the scenes, you know, support that and understand that too. It's it's very empowering.
So this question is sort of personal for me. So you and I are both Telugu, so we're South Indian.
Yes.
Yay. You don't see it a lot.
Telugu. You don't. No.
But, you know, like a lot of other people of our culture, you and I both have dark skin. There's mm-hmm. colorism in American culture, Indian culture, Indian American culture. Mm-hmm. For, I guess, a normal person whose looks don't necessarily, you know, define their job. But how is it when, you know, your job does depend on looks a lot of the time?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought it up because it's such an important topic that we don't talk about. We just don't do it. Right. I mean, I have had to, the darker skin thing is just a very tough thing. I think even within our South Asian community of a representation, sure. we don't see as many people who are South, who are dark, not even South Indian, but darker skinned.
Yeah.
And I think the examples of beauty and the examples of an attractive male or female or non-gender binary character is usually a lighter skinned counterpart.
Yeah.
I had that growing up, you know, whether it was any Bollywood movie that I watched, you know. And I know now, again, there are some of those role models in Southern India that we can look up to. But when it comes to here, yeah, I think it's just not something that we normally see. And so I feel very happy that that at least in this film we have some of that.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I've had to face certain issues when it came to the skin color kind of stuff, and at the end of the day, you know, I think that's something that I've struggled with is I wish I was lighter skinned or I wish I was white. You know, that's always been a conversation that I've had to sort of work through that. But, you know, I'm really grateful that again, this, I think this just all leans into the why I feel so strongly about creating your own stuff. Because if it's up to somebody else to tell you who you are, like it's nobody else is going to know you better than you. And so that's why I really feel it's important to try and inspire, hopefully, and for people who might be thinking about doing something like this to really try it, because I think it really is needed, especially in these circumstances. It's helpful, and other people see that and it makes a difference.
I know for sure, like anyone seeing this movie or even just like seeing the trailer and seeing you and the other people, like it just, you don't know what you're missing, right? Until you see it sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. You don't. Yeah.
And so skin color and then also just like anglicized features, I think, like even in Bollywood.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. How many people just look like white people, but they're brown?
I know. What is that?
Like what? Yeah. Like they're, and that's the thing about it. It's like, and this goes into all of it. It's just like, I can't fight that fight in a room that I don't have a part of it, that I don't have a say in the conversation. I can't go into an audition room, right? And try and convince someone that, and try to explain this whole thing, right? Yeah. They're just not going to get it. It's not going to happen. So it's just a thing. And you go to India and you realize there's so many people that have different facial features, and there's obviously a whole different part. Southern, you know, the Dravidians that came into the South, the Aryans that came to the North, it's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy about RRR, for example, that just even exists and that the West has embraced it. Because those are actors, and Roger Mooley, someone I've been watching since I was a kid. So it's great that I can correct a professor in a classroom when he says RRR is a Bollywood film, and I say, no, it's a Tollywood film. And he goes, I stand corrected. Thank you for that.
So you really did that?
I really did. Yeah. I was awesome. No, it's a different industry. Like it's different actors. It's a different thing. We look different. We don't look like Bollywood actors. It's not the same. Like you wouldn't say the same about you know, any other industry, right? Bollywood or Hollywood.
And did you, you did say that watching Tollywood films was part of you growing up. Like that was a,
definitely.
Yeah.
I loved it. I had a lot of South Asian friends be like, I hated Bollywood and I hated the, and like, I wanted to like do, you know, what is the word? Like go against the grain and make my own thing. But I just loved it. I just loved the unabashed style, just willingness to, truly nothing makes sense. And so therefore everything does make sense. You know, you just accept it. And once you accept it, it's just the best. It's just a ride.
And also that you did not, I got, we were talking about Anirudh from Never Have I Ever, mm-hmm, that
yeah.
Anglicizing your name was so common.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, a few years ago, but
yeah,
something you see less now.
Which, yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, look, you know, I would hope people, you know, I mean, I created Venk, you know, is short for Venkatesh, but I didn't do that out of any way to anglicize it. Obviously, I just shortened it because I liked it when I was in the first grade at some point. That's how I decided to become Venk. I don't know. And it just stuck with me. I just decided I'm going to be called Venk.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that that's, you know, something.
No. But it's just generally, I think we should embrace our names the way they're supposed to be pronounced and the way they are. That's why I really appreciate Hassan for correcting Ellen.
Oh my God. I think about that moment all the time, honestly. Just like,
yeah, right.
How amazing.
It's amazing. Like, he's like, if people could say that the Arnold Schwarzenegger, then why can't they say my name? Right. Yeah. It's just like, it's so true. Just like the, yeah, but it takes someone to say it. And that's why when you said, did you, I will always try and correct somebody if it's not correct because the, you know, it's, we have to.
I didn't ask you this before, but mm-hmm. we were talking about Bollywood and Tollywood, and you mentioned dancing. Are you a dancer? Like, did you have like training or anything growing up?
I did a little training. I did a little ballet. I did a little ballet. Yeah, I did it in college and in high school. I did a little ballet. I think I took some hip hop classes once. When I was working with Nick, I was doing a lot of dancing. Like my whole shtick was that I was this guy because he found me dancing. So I was just in the film School Dance. I'm always in the background dancing. I wouldn't say I'm a dancer, but I can move. I can move. I have rhythm. I think I can, you know, but I'm not like a dancer. I'm not a proper dancer by any means. I don't know if I can follow choreography, but what Nick would do is he would just be like, okay, it's time for your take, guru. He called me my so Guru Datta is a prefix that goes in front of my name. So he'd call me Guru, be like, time for Guru. And then I would go and then I would just unleash and just, I don't know what I would do. I would do all sorts of weird dance moves. You could see there's a clip of me on Ellen going crazy and that was not choreographed. So, you know, it's the Me Sexy dance that we did like in 2013. And that was crazy to just be on Ellen and dance. So maybe you could watch that.
Yeah, I gotta find that. That's definitely what I'm doing right after we get off this.
Yeah.
And yes, so you're a multi-hyphenate. What are all your descriptors right now, I guess?
Oh God, I know. If I list them all out, it'll take us forever. No, I mean, really at the end of the day, I'd say it is about storytelling and it is about trying to figure out what does the story need and how can I enhance that story from each of these different perspectives. So I can speak from the perspective of being an actor and what I can bring to a role and what I can bring to a character to give my take on it. Same as being a producer and how can I help the filmmaker get their vision out there. As a writer, it's about truly generating the story, the idea, and writing the characters. I mean, you know, and so right now, I think those are the three that I'm leaning into, and eventually I'd like to direct soon.
Sorry, just taking my notes.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the Bollywood, Tollywood stuff?
I think I'm like one of your friends where I...
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't... But you know what? I wasn't into it when I was a kid. And my parents didn't like force it on me. But I remember I grew up in the Midwest and I moved to New York after college. And there was, you and I talked, like, we didn't grow up super, like, with a small Indian community, but that was it. When I moved to New York, I realized there are so many people my age who have seen every Bollywood movie ever, memorized lines, like go to trivia nights and stuff. And I was like, wait, why was I so like against this, you know? Yeah, so that's an unpacking. But I have had a little bit of an education since then. And there are so many great like independent films coming
Of
out of
course,
India, like the Indie American Film Festival every year has tons of
IFLA
stuff.
is
And
amazing.
yeah. So what other projects do you have coming up? I don't know if you can tell me anything about them, but
So I can share a little bit about one of them. I mean, I'm adapting a TV series based on the podcast that I mentioned earlier, Masala Jones, into a TV series. So that's in development right now. And I have a feature also in development that I'm attached to, star and produce. And I'm also involved as a writer in that project. And that's a story about a South Asian music manager who, after his estranged father passes away, gets stuck with a 13-year-old half Mexican, half Indian sister, because
okay.
the dad remarried and had a kid that this guy didn't know about. So it's ultimately a story about how do you balance a lot. I think a lot of the things that I mentioned earlier, just the idea of that ambition, don't let ambition swallow you. How do you prioritize between family and career and your dreams in some ways? And what do you do? What do you do when those things really become tested?
And I don't know if you had any input into this decision. I'm not sure how the producer credit works, but like how did you, I don't know if this is something talked about after Tribeca, but like I know there's a big conversation now about like what people are going to go to the movie theaters to see. And like I guess how do you see like the future of movies totally being different, like in your opinion as a viewer and as an actor.
So can you repeat the question again?
Well, just I guess like what do you see people going to see? Like, do you think it's just a matter of time before people start going back to the movies, you know, more? Like, what can we do for people who love movies to get people to go see, you know?
No, I think movies will always be here, and I think even the independent films, the smaller films, will still find a way. Whether that's going to be through theatrical or just streaming or what, how that's going to look. I think stories need to be told and perspectives that we don't often see. I think they'll find a way to get told because it's like survival of the fittest. In order to survive, this is a thing we have to do. So what medium that looks like, it's hard to say. I mean, I feel confident that the Marvel films, I guess, aren't going anywhere. And the big budget, high franchise IP stuff isn't going anywhere. But I think also the independent films, something like A Force of Moses, I think it's important because that's how new voices get discovered. And I think people that seek it out, the people that really, really do like that stuff, do seek it out and find it. And I think there'll always be a way to find it.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Is there anything that you wish you have given, maybe you've already said it, like advice that you would give people who are looking to get in and, you know, things, but is there something you wish you knew when you were 10 years ago, when you were getting into the business?
Oh man, 10 years ago. Something I wish I knew 10 years ago.
Or, you know, maybe everything happens for a reason, so you're glad.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, I do think everything happens for a reason. 10 years ago, I think something I wish I knew. I don't know. I think it's tough. I don't know. I'm
You
struggling with
have
this
said
question.
some great
No,
nuggets there.
but I'm gonna come up with something. I think I I mean, I guess I wish I knew that everything I thought was gonna be hard really is that hard. I think I thought that, you know, everyone tells you it's not easy. It's not going to, and I was like, yeah, yeah, I know. Like, I'm ready. It's not easy. But I guess I didn't realize how much trying to pursue something like this can really test your willingness to want to do it. I think it's so much easier to do something else. And I have to say, Ravi has been an amazing mentor in that regard. I can't tell you how many times I've called him just being like, I don't know. You know, one thing Ravi said to me that I think was really helpful is he said, you know what, Venk, I hate to tell you this, but you're an artist, which means that for better or for worse, this is who you are. This is the life that you've signed up for. And it was comforting. And I think I've kind of come to that realization now that I really do feel like if this is something you want to try and be a creative in this kind of way, you will know. And it's something that you just can't help, you know? So might as well accept and get along with it and just roll with the punches as they come.
Because this is what you were meant to do.
This is what it is. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't have any doubt. 10 years ago, I didn't have any doubt that I would be in this thing. I mean, I had maybe doubts, but I always had confidence that, or I always felt that I was meant in some way. I don't know whether it's a higher power, whatever it is, that I'd be doing what the kind of thing I'm doing now.
You should definitely make a show like Dave about your life.
I
think it would be really good.
Wow. All right. I might
just actually, like the way you're saying, like, I had that confidence. Like, I know we said it was similar, but like,
yeah,
you get some good stories to tell.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I love Dave. And I love that kind of thing. Maybe. Yeah.
Who else would you say you count as like a mentor or collaborator in the South Asian community? Or who would you want to?
Who would I want to? Yeah, I mean, I would love to have a chat with Mindy, of course. That'd be amazing. You know what? We were at Rain Dance Film Festival just this past weekend, and Gurinder Chadha, I don't know if you know, she directed Benedict Beckham and a bunch of movies. She moderated our Q&A. We went out for dinner afterwards, and it was awesome getting the chance to talk to her and connect with her, just to hear about. She's such an amazing, I think, director and leader. And you just get the sense she just oozes confidence, even at the point there's a sense about her that's like, you know, she's going to be fine with or without you.
Oh, you know, I like that.
So, yeah, I'm going to take that from my conversation with Gurinder. And she loved the film, and she really liked my performance and the tone of the film, and really supported us. And that was really amazing to see. I mean, Utkarsh, who is an EP on our film, has been a mentor definitely for me, someone over the years. I mean, the way I met him is sort of like the Nick Cannon story. I was...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was doing it was like 2016. I was playing actually a rapper in this live dinner theater experience.
So
it was called Hollywood Premiere Party. And the whole concept of the show was, it was like a $200 million movie, fake movie called Love and Waffles. Rom-com this was like the premiere for. So this was like an experiential, like live theater dinner thing where you get dinner. So the customers would come in and there'd be a red carpet, and then all the actors playing all the movie stars would come out of this like limousine, and then we would have these actors playing photographers to take them, and everyone in the audience would be like, oh, who's that? And you'd like be in this play. And so I played this character named Big Little, who is this rapper who is a little salty that his best friend, who is the director, cut his music out of the film. And so he was there to like cause problems. So
it was like you would be on the red carpet, like causing problems.
Yeah. So I'd be on the red carpet, like in character, doing my thing. And then I would talk to actors, and they'd be like, you're an actor, right? And I'd be like, no, man, I'm Big Little. I'm a rapper, you know? And so it was one of those things. And so I recognized Utkarsh. He came to one of the shows because one of his childhood, I think one of his really close friends anyways, was also a cast member. And so I recognized him. And so I think I saw him like in line to go to the bathroom.
Oh my God.
And I broke character for 1 second, never broke a character in my life, to be like, hey, I'm a big fan of your work. Do you think I can get your email address? He gave it to me. Your business card? I just got his email, because the thing is, I realized you can't give business cards. Otherwise, no one's going to hit you up. You have to get their email. That's the thing about networking. So I got his email.
And, he was just like, yeah, cool.
He was like, yeah, sure. I mean, this was like almost 7 years ago now. So it was definitely different. But yeah, no, he's been great. I would do this and I'd send him shorts and I would just try to keep in touch with him. And so I sent him a link to Forsomosis. To see if he'd be interested in becoming an EP on it. And he's been really great at supporting us.
That's so awesome. So would you say that's something you do? Like, don't be shy, just like ask someone for their email.
And I have no shame. I have no shame. I have truly, I've embarrassed myself. I mean, I was dancing on the street 10 years ago. I've been embarrassing myself since I was a kid. Let's be honest. So yeah, at this point, I got nothing left. I got no dignity left, you know, that I need to worry about. So
that is very inspirational. Did he say anything about you breaking character? He was just like, whatever.
He was like, yeah. I was like, you can't break character, man. You're doing the role. Told me later. I was like, yeah, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah, once in a lifetime.
Like one exception. I guess for me, it's like, I think about an opportunity as being anything you really can make. An opportunity can be anything, you know, it's just how you see it. So I don't have any shame. I'll talk to anybody. And I'm very shameless in what I ask for, because for me, it's not about me. It's about something else. It's about trying to, put myself in a position where I can tell stories that I know other people might be too scared to tell, or might not be in a position to tell. So if I can be the scapegoat for the dignity of it all in order to get a movie made, I'll do it.
You're sacrificing for us all.
Maybe that's a lot. Put it that way. It sounds a little, doesn't sound right.
Is there someone you've kind of done that to and they were like, no, like, don't talk to me?
Yeah. Sam Raimi. The premiere.
What?
Yeah. Sam Raimi at the so James Franco was my teacher for 2 years.
I saw that in your bio.
Yeah. So he was in this movie called Oz the Great and Powerful.
Okay.
This is networking gone wrong.
Okay.
he was in that film and Sam Raimi directed it. So I mean, it really was an amazing class to study with James, and he's a weird guy. He's got his own eccentric taste. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for me, I was like, I'm in class with James Franco. This is 2013, so it's different. But yeah, he invited us all to that premiere, so I got to talk to Sam Raimi. And I think the thing there was, I waited until the very end of the party to talk to him, and I was so in my head about how I have to make an impression, because I used to think if I just got 5 minutes with like Spielberg, my career would be set. I just tell them that I'm like, I'm passionate, I'm talented, and this and that, and they'll know, right? They'll just know.
Yeah.
And that was my like 3 minutes with Sam Raimi. And without even knowing anything about me, he was like, my first advice is to go to theater school for acting. And I was like, oh, I'm already doing that. And then he said, best of luck, and left.
Oh, man.
And that was it. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I tried to put it out there and then nothing came back. And again, I think that's why, like, I don't know. I think we just, I guess within our community, it's so important to have that mentorship and to have people we can look up to, there's obviously some, I mean, nothing against Sam Raimi, he's an amazing director. He had clearly didn't want to be bothered with me and didn't need to be bothered with me. I was probably being annoying, but that was my annoying phase.
Yeah, no, but I mean, shoot your shot.
That's what I'm saying.
First, this is going to sound really creepy, and I know you have your background blurred, but I think we have the same bedspread. You don't have to tell me.
Do we really?
Is it the bird thing? Is it from Target?
No, it's not a bird thing. It's a plant. It's like a leaf thing.
Because one of them is a peacock, and that's what I thought I saw.
Oh, no.
I was you're so on brand, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. I need to get more on brand. I need to get like you. So let me know what that bread spread is.
Yeah, I need a link. Oh, can I have
your email? Yeah, do. Please do.
Actually, I do need your email. You can chat if you want.
Oh, yeah. Do you actually need it?
Yeah. So to speak. So what is. See, I just need to start doing that more. So outside of acting, is there, I'm sorry, outside of all the things that we've already talked about,
there's
something that you do?
Well, I love chess. I'm a fan. Really? I'm a chess. I love chess. I love chess, and I love strategy. Like, I love strategy stuff, you know. I love card games. I love like that kind of thing, that you know, just that type of stuff, whether it's a video game or whatever it is. I do really get a kick out of that. Like, I used to play Animal Crossing as a kid, and I remember my pitch to my dad was, "Dad, if you let me buy Animal Crossing, which was like $20 at Target, I'll learn financial skills." Because you have to like shake trees and like sell fruits, and then you got to pay off. You get a loan, you have to pay it off.
did he go for it?
He did go for it, and I finally got it. It took a few times. This is when I was a kid. But yeah, I like that kind of stuff.
Well, I think you have a lot of negotiation skills, like from a young age, though, right? I guess so.
I feel like I've been negotiating with my family my whole life, you know. I feel like I'm just I'm trying to, like, you know, figure out how to get what I want and get their approval.
Well, is that kind of like when you're producing and trying to get money for a film?
What do you mean?
I guess, like, I don't hear a lot of that, like when you were talking about being behind the scenes in a movie, when I talk to someone who is like you, I guess. So what do you feel, I guess, like, what are challenges in that part of the movie making process?
In the producing process?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, having a business plan, having not necessarily a physical business plan. I mean, that's always a good thing to have, but just being prepared. I think it's just about knowing your facts, knowing that when you're talking to someone who wants to support you or champion you, you know, you need to be able to answer those questions. It's like Shark Tank, you know. I mean, if you're pitching to a studio or pitching to an investor, it doesn't matter. Like, you need to know your material, you need to know your story, you need to know the business of it, how is it going to work. I think it's just about arming yourself with information and going in as prepared as you can, and then being able to deliver the information and pitch it in a way that feels accessible and easy to digest, because the last thing that they want is like an overcomplicated explanation of it. So how do you then digest all that information in a succinct way that's easy to take in is part of the skill of pitching and also trying to communicate the importance of your story or whatever it is, why that's important to you. I think it's always start with personal. What is your personal connection? Why does it matter to you first? Because that's what people sink into, is when they feel like they know you a little bit, then they maybe can understand where you're coming from.
So you would say, like, that's something you would start with is like, this is why this project relates to me and why
absolutely
personally relate to it.